Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we'll break down the governor's State of the State address last night and get responses from lawmakers from both parties. First, the U.S. House of Representatives is voting right now on an impeachment resolution against President Donald Trump. This follows Vice President Mike Pence refusing in writing to invoke the 25th Amendment and take over the presidency effectively from Trump. The House had passed a resolution calling on Pence to do that. It's the week in Washington, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this new effort to impeach the president? Would you like to see the House take more time? Do you think they're right to act swiftly? Do you think the Senate should move quickly? It looks like as of right now, they will not do that. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Kevin Sullivan is senior correspondent for The Washington Post. He's co-author of the book Trump on Trial, The Investigation, Impeachment, Acquittal, and Aftermath. Kevin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, and thanks for tearing yourself away, I imagine, from watching that vote count roll in. Kevin, you looked closely at the previous impeachment as it was going on and in your book. What kind of things are striking you as similar or different, especially when it comes to what we're hearing from Republicans today?
I think that is the big difference. You know, in the first, we're hearing a lot of the same arguments from the Republicans that we heard last time. And last time, very passionate arguments. You know, this is a sham. It's a charade. It's just political retribution. It's revenge. And there was kind of this united wall of argument from the Republicans that Democrats had just had it in for the president since even before he was elected. And this time we're hearing a lot of the same stuff, but there's also a new vein that's running through it, which is, yeah, I didn't like what I heard from the president very much either. But to impeach at this point would just be too divisive. We should be trying to bring the country together, not dividing it further. So I think that nuance in the Republican argument is different this time.
Yeah, Kevin McCarthy, GOP leader, says he's not voting for impeachment, but he says, quoting, that doesn't mean the president is free from fault. The president, McCarthy says, bears responsibility for when his attack on Congress by mob rioters. He should have immediately denounced the mob when he saw what was unfolding. So there are some Republicans not voting for impeachment, but not necessarily completely defending the president today. Is that a fair read?
Oh, yes, exactly. And Kevin McCarthy was the kind of the chairman of the Yeah But coalition today. You know, he said it very, very clearly. The president bears responsibility for what he said and for a lot of the violence that happened. But it's not impeachable. We should be trying to bring the country together. I mean, he was very clear on that. And, you know, in McCarthy last time was one of the real stalwart fire breathers. I mean, he was one of the president's most staunch defenders and saw absolutely nothing wrong with anything that the president had done last time.
I want to give a listen to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi talking during the debate prior to the vote, making her case here. Here's a listen.
And we know that the president of the United States incited this insurrection, this armed rebellion against our common country. He must go. He is a clear and present danger to the nation that we all love.
So that's Speaker Pelosi there. I want to also give a listen to House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, Democrat from Maryland. Now here he's reading from a statement released by Representative Liz Cheney, Republican from Wyoming. He's quoting her. She didn't speak, as I understand, during the debate. Here's him reading her comments saying why she was going to vote to impeach.
The president of the United States summoned the mob, assembled the mob, and lit the flame of this attack. That is not some irresponsible new member of the Congress of the United States. This is the daughter of the former Republican whip and former vice president of the United States of America.
So a few Republicans, I think we're up to 9, saying they were going to vote for impeachment here, including most prominently Liz Cheney, a high-ranking Republican in Congress, being quoted there by Democrat Steny Hoyer because she didn't speak in the debate. What are you hearing from the Republicans who are jumping on board the impeachment train this time?
Well, I sort of gave up counting how many times Steny Hoyer mentioned Liz Cheney and how warmly he spoke of her father, which is kind of a new position.
Kind of a surprise,
for him, I think,
yeah.
But, a little bit. Some of the Republicans in the House have actually gone after Liz Cheney. They want her stripped of her leadership position. They think that what she said was basically, betrayal of the Republican position. So I think a lot of people are, there's a lot of people voting their conscience on this one. And if we're up to, I think, 7, 8, 9 Republicans, as you say, it's certainly not enough to, it's a fraction of the coalition up there. But the fact that you're seeing that many is really remarkable, especially having gone through the last impeachment where it was an absolute 100% solid wall of support for the president.
I want to give a listen to a Wisconsin representative, Republican Tom Tiffany, who spoke during the debate today. He was one of the members of Congress, Republican members of Congress, who had voted to reject a couple of electoral states from Arizona and Pennsylvania. He is voting against impeachment. Here's a listen.
Joe Biden has talked about unity and healing. Is that what this is today? Is accusing Republican lawmakers of sedition and calling for their expulsion the plan for healing? Is working with Silicon Valley to digitally disappear those with whom they disagree with the plan for reconciliation?
And this is another theme, Kevin, we've heard from some Republicans saying, let's focus on getting together in unity, and impeachment is going to get in the way of that.
Right. And, I think everyone up there, Democrats and Republicans, is worried about that issue. I think that maybe one of the funniest moments of the day, if there was a funny moment, was Mike Quigley, the Democrat from Illinois, is a lawyer. And he stood up and he said, if I had a client who said, "Yes, Your Honor, I robbed the bank, but can't we all come together now and be in unite?" He said it wouldn't get too far. So I think that's the Democrats are viewing this that way. They're thinking you can't just forgive this outrage, what they see as completely outrageous behavior by the president, by calling for unity. On the other hand, the last thing the Democrats want as Joe Biden takes office is for there to be even more on his plate, for things to be even more divided. He's already got the pandemic. He's got the economy. He's got race relations. There's so much on the incoming president's plate that to have one more thing dividing him, it was something I'm sure that they thought about very, very hard and long.
We're talking to Kevin Sullivan, senior correspondent for The Washington Post. He's co-author of the book Trump on Trial. That's about the first impeachment of President Trump. We're talking about the second impeachment ongoing as we speak right now. You can share your thoughts. Email us ideas@WPR.org. Or if you're watching all this on Twitter, take a moment, tweet us @CentralTimeWPR. Let's look ahead a moment, Kevin. I think it's clear that the House will end up passing this. The Senate. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, it hadn't been clear if he was going to act quickly to go to a Senate trial. That looks like it is not likely at this point. What are we hearing right now?
That's right. McConnell said today that the earliest that the Senate would come back is the day before the inauguration. And it just doesn't seem likely at this point that there will be a trial. I mean, wouldn't rule it out, but it doesn't seem at all likely that the Senate will take this up before the inauguration. And there's even some question about whether they would take it up immediately, in the next week or so, or there has been some talk about waiting 100 days to give President Biden a chance to get his agenda moving without the distraction of a Senate trial. But, we just don't know. And on McConnell, even McConnell's own position on this has been subject of some great speculation. And last time around, he left absolutely zero room for speculation. You knew precisely where he stood. He stood with the president. But this time he's saying things like, "I'm going to listen, at the trial, I'll listen to all the arguments," that's a new Mitch McConnell.
I think a lot of people are asking the question now, what's the point of an impeachment if it doesn't get done until the president being impeached is already out of office anyway? Why would we do that?
Exactly. Well, I think if you're Nancy Pelosi, if you're the Democrats, your answer to that is because we have a responsibility to do this. This is the strongest rebuke of the president that the Constitution has given us, and we want to express in the strongest possible terms how disgusted we are with what he did. And they say, other people have said, well, maybe we should have a censure. And someone said that would be like sending Jack the Ripper a letter saying, we deplore your murders. They saying this is something that the Democrats feel like they need to really put a stamp on this and really kind of draw a line in the sand and say that how strongly they feel about what he did.
Now, here's another big difference between the second Trump impeachment and the first one. Right now, the National Guard is literally camped out in the Capitol. We've seen images of them sleeping on the hard marble floors there. This comes a week after members of Congress felt justifiably that their lives were at risk because of this assault. People were calling for the hanging of the vice president, for the shooting of the House Speaker. How is that shaping how this is all working out logistically and what we're hearing from the members of Congress?
It's remarkable. Listen to the description of Washington that you just gave, and it's 100% accurate. But can you imagine? I mean, this city is really locked down. We have new metal fences everywhere. As you say, you have National Guardsmen sleeping in the Capitol with their weapons. It's just it's remarkable what's happening here. So, I mean, I don't think anybody really has any sense of which way this is going to go in the next few days.
Talking to Kevin Sullivan from The Washington Post, looking at the looks like still ongoing impeachment vote in the House of Representatives. You can join in. Ordinarily, we'd be taking your calls right about now. A little bit of a hiccup in the phone system, but that's OK, because you can still email us ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Share your thoughts. What do you want to see come out of today? Do you think the president should be impeached a second time? Would you want to see the U.S. Senate come together maybe quickly, maybe before the inauguration to take action on a trial? Current plan is no, they're not going to do that, it sounds like. What questions do you have about how all this works? Join in again, email ideas@WPR.org or tweet us @CentralTimeWPR. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with senior correspondent Kevin Sullivan at The Washington Post. It's our weekly look at the big news in national politics. We're watching the news breaking right now. The vote on the impeachment of President Trump, it is in progress right now. You can join in with your thoughts. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Or tweet us @CentralTimeWPR. Now, Kevin, one concern that's been raised about this is too fast in the House. We're not taking witnesses. We're not getting all the details of what happened last week. How much have we heard from that from Republicans? And have Democrats been saying they wish they knew more, whether or not they're in a hurry to vote here?
Well, I think there's no denying that this is lightning speed. The last impeachment was kind of a record, was record fast, and it took several months. This is taking an afternoon. I think the Democrats would say this is just realistic. We don't have much time. We only have 7 days remaining in this presidency. And a couple of the Democrats addressed this today, saying what we saw was so blatant and so obvious that we don't need a committee. We don't need legal scholars to come in here and tell us what he said. We saw what he said. Now, the Republicans, of course, are saying this is crazy. We've heard from no witnesses. There are different interpretations of the president's action. We should talk about the legal definition of incitement, and we should slow this thing way down and have hearings. It's a legitimate question. And I think, both sides have been thinking about it a lot.
We've heard now from Representative Michael McCaul, Republican in Texas, saying he's voting against it for the reason I just mentioned, not getting enough information at this point. He says he's going to vote against impeachment, says, I truly fear there may be more facts that come to light in the future that will put me on the wrong side of this debate. And as we learn more about what happened a week ago today, Kevin, it looks worse in hindsight. What kind of developments have you been watching over the last week to see what went down a week ago today at the Capitol?
Well, everything that has come out of law enforcement in the last few days has only kind of raised more questions about, whether this was in some way coordinated, whether this did have people leading it. Was there, were there conspirators who've been planning this for some time? There were even a couple of reports that maybe there were people, actually members of Congress or members of law enforcement who were involved in this. I mean, at this point, who knows? I mean, it's just, it's a lot of, It's a lot of noise at this point. I don't think anything's been proven, but there are so many questions. And as you say, there are more questions today than there were last Wednesday night.
We heard from Jen on Twitter who says, I wanted to tell you how I really feel, but my teeth will be removed. She clarifies, tweet, not teeth. Autocorrect is now censuring me, LOL. But strong feelings, Jen says, that she's not expressing fully. Now, one thing that's not happening this time around is President Trump is not live tweeting along with the event after being banned from Twitter, his personal account. Does that change the feel of this without that constant sort of looking over the shoulder from the president?
Well, it sure does. You know, in Trump on Trial, our book about the first impeachment, you know, the president is like a Greek chorus. The president's Twitter is, I mean, that's how we represent the president's views. Every couple of pages, there's another tweet from the president, because that is how he was communicating his views on this whole thing. He didn't testify. He was tweeting. So if we tried to write the same book now about this, it would be completely different there, because the president's tweets are just, and they were so instantaneous. They were so colorful. I mean, remember when the ambassador Marie Yovanovitch was testifying last time, and Trump started tweeting attacks at her in real time, and Adam Schiff stopped the hearing to read the tweets. I mean, it was just remarkable. So yeah, that's a huge dynamic difference in this one.
Okay, now it's looking like there are enough votes to impeach, though the vote is still going on. They surpassed the amount of votes needed to impeach President Trump. According to Manu Raju from, what is he, CNN?
CNN,
10 Republicans now have broken ranks on this. So this will be a unique moment in American history, the first president to be impeached by the House twice.
Yeah, I mean, who thought that was even possible? I mean, in the history of the country, we've only ever had two other presidents impeached ever, and this one's been impeached twice. I don't know what that means historically. I do know that it means that it just says something about how divided this country is right now, and Donald Trump's place right in the center of that, because, you know, love him or hate him, he has really caused this massive divide right down the middle of this country.
Kevin Sullivan is with us from the Washington Post, looking at the ongoing impeachment vote. They've reached the threshold now where it will pass, it looks like. Marie Lisa emailed, considering the Republican-led agreement with the issue of the steal and legitimacy of the election, how come that wouldn't equate to the legitimacy of Republicans in the congressional elections into question? And that's just one element, Kevin, of concerns about some members of Congress who led the effort to overturn the electoral ballots from some states. What are we hearing from Democrats when it comes to censure or other consequences for other members of Congress?
You know, I think the trick with a lot of these things with impeachment is just to kind of keep your eye on the ball. And there's so, you know, the ball is this vote that's happening right now. And there's so much noise that happens along the sidelines. Well, what about this? And what if that? And you said this and you said that. And it's a very good question. I mean, a lot of this people who were elected by the very same ballots that elected Joe Biden are the ones questioning them. So are they questioning their own legitimacy too? It happens on both sides. It's just a lot. There's just a lot of preening and posturing that doesn't really add up to very much. And you just have to keep your eye on that bottom line number on the TV right now.
We've heard secondhand concerns. Republican Peter Meyer from Michigan, freshman who has voted for impeachment, now expressed concerns from his Republican colleagues. We've heard it from Democrats, too, saying some of the Republican colleagues are concerned about their safety, that they might be more prone to vote for impeachment. They're worried about the physical safety of themselves or their families. Did we hear anything like that in the first impeachment?
No. No, I mean, in the first impeachment, there was a lot of, the only thing people were worried about was kind of political retribution. But it's so different now. I mean, after what we saw happen, you know, with the Michigan governor and what happened last week and all of the reports that we're hearing about potential violence all over the country and the way this city is just now a lockdown fortress. I mean, you know, if I were a member of Congress, no matter which way I was voting in this, I mean, you have to be thinking in the back of your mind, geez, they came for me last week. Who's going to be coming for me next? I mean, I don't think it's grossly exaggerating the situation anymore to say that these people do have to, in the back of their mind, keep thinking about their physical safety.
So what are you watching for now, this House vote winding to a close? What are you watching for in the Donald Trump saga, which you followed so closely for such a long time?
Well, I mean, I'd love to know what he's going to say about it. I mean, you saw, you know, earlier today he put out a statement calling for calm, and you know, it was saying no violence, no vandalism, you know, this, that's not what we were for. And of course, both sides, the Republicans hold it up and say, see, this is what we've been saying all along. This is a peaceful president. He's promised a peaceful transition of power. And the Democrats look at that and say, gosh, that's what a coincidence. Just while we're debating, you know, his lack of adherence to the rule of law, he tweets about how much he loves the rule of law. Or not tweets, but he puts out a statement. It's fascinating to hear what he's going to say about this and when and how he's going to say it. And, you know, and what Senate Republicans are going to do, because they're going to be on record now. And I think a lot of them are very uncomfortable with it. And especially if Mitch McConnell votes against, if he abandons ship and votes against the president, that could cause a number of other Republican senators to go that way as well. Who knows?
We'll leave it there for now. Kevin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Kevin Sullivan is a senior correspondent for The Washington Post. He's co-author of the book Trump on Trial, The Investigation, Impeachment, Acquittal, and Aftermath. We talked to him about today's vote on impeaching Donald Trump for a second time, and the threshold has been passed, so the House has, or soon will have, voted to impeach the president a second time. We'll be covering this more later today after 5, and tune in tomorrow for more conversation about what happens next here on the Ideas Network. Coming up after the news, we'll get responses to Governor Evers' State of the State address last night, and you can join in with your reactions. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 8 on the morning show, the Packers are getting ready for the first playoff game this weekend, hopefully well-rested after a well-deserved bye week. Kate Archer, Kent, and her guests look at the Packers' regular season run and whether they could go all the way. It's tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Now, Governor Tony Evers gave his annual State of the State address virtually last night, dedicating his speech to the thousands of lives lost in Wisconsin to COVID-19 and highlighting policy goals. The governor announced he was calling a special session for the legislature to fix the state's decades-old system for processing unemployment claims. His administration blames the system for the backlog that kept some waiting months to get their checks.
The system isn't new, and these problems aren't either. And Republicans and Democrats alike are to blame.
Our next guest joins us to break down the speech and the Republican response delivered by Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you catch the governor's address and the Republican response? What did you think? Do you think there are areas where Republicans and Democrats could work together on policy issues? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Phil Chen is an assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. Phil, welcome back to Central Time.
Always happy to be here, Rob.
Well, Phil, we've got a Democratic governor, a Republican legislature. They have not played well with each other on a variety of issues. Did you hear anything last night that says, hey, maybe there's some common ground where they can work together?
You know, I think the one thing that I heard in Governor Evers' speech that I think there probably would be some kind of common ground would likely be on the issue of rural broadband, or broadband access in general. You'll notice there are certain issues that are brought up in the State of the State that are immediately talked about in the response, and some that are sort of glossed over or not talked about. the ones that are sort of glossed over, you can assume are either non-starters for the other side or generally points of agreement. And so if you look at the main issues that Governor Evers talked about, I think the one that stood out to me is likely that increase in broadband access.
We're going to hear from a couple state lawmakers over the course of this conversation, and let's bring one on now. Assembly Representative Jim Steinecke joins us, Republican representing Wisconsin's 5th Assembly District in the Kaukauna area, just north of Appleton. He is the Assembly Majority Leader. Representative Steinecke, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Well, your response in general to what we heard from the governor and from the Assembly Speaker last night?
Yeah, I mean, the governor's speech was highly polished campaign commercial from what we could tell from the chambers with him not being there. I think the disappointing thing is he's been governor for 2 years and he's taken no responsibility for what's happened with unemployment. And in fact, the special session call is more of a deflection than anything, because we know, and our legislative fiscal bureau confirmed today, that he has every authority to do what he is proposing in this legislation all by himself with no legislative approval, and he has the money necessary to do it as well. So he doesn't even need a special session. He's calling a special session in order to deflect blame from the administration's lack of an ability to handle this crisis and their poor response to it. And it's just unfortunate.
What would you have liked to have seen from the governor early next year as those unemployment claims mounted during COVID-19?
We gave them a bunch of different ideas on how to fast track the claims, from expanding call center hours to moving employees, more employees over faster, a whole host of different things that could have increased the response time for these claims. I mean, it is unconscionable that tens of thousands of Wisconsinites were waiting weeks and months for help from the state government. And there was very little sense of urgency coming from the administration. And only now, a year later, are they proposing changes that they could have done all by themselves all along.
Now, the governor and others have pointed to the old system, said Republicans who controlled state government for a long time could have fixed it, could have removed at least some of the roadblocks that caused trouble early on. What do you say to that?
Yeah, again, it's more deflection. Other states use the same type of system that we have and didn't have near the issues that we had. I mean, if everything was going along swimmingly and there was no fault within the agency or the administration, why did he fire Caleb Frostman, who was heading up the agency? There was obviously problems there that they have not been willing to admit, and now this is more deflection. If he wants to do this, why wait for legislative approval? He can do it today.
Vaccine rollout has been, well, it's been a problem nationwide, some states worse than others. What would you have wanted to hear from the governor about vaccine plans here in the state for COVID-19?
What the actual plan is, because as far as we can tell, local health officials have been extremely frustrated with the administration over the course of the last 9 months, because they're often the last to know what's going on. Often hearing what the administration is doing, not from the administration itself, but rather from media reports when the administration announces something. So it's got to get better, because we can't go down from here. We're 10th out of 12 Midwestern states in vaccine rollout efficiency. So we don't have we can't drop much further. Hopefully, and we've asked the governor to be part of this process. Tommy Thompson at the UW system has also said that he could help, but we have been rebuffed at every opportunity that we have presented it, some help.
One bit of criticism pointed at the legislature and Republicans in it is you did a big package in March and not much since on COVID. What would you say to people who say, hey, you should have been back in session doing more?
Yeah, we did. Most people don't understand, and I can understand why they don't. The bill back in spring last year had dozens and dozens of items that the administration requested. The administration had unfettered access to over $2 billion from the federal government with no legislative oversight. So they had all the tools in the toolbox over the course of those months of 2020. In fact, the governor never asked us to come back and pass any specific policy item that he said he needed. So that's the thing that we were struggling with. Now, hopefully in the next few weeks we'll be able to come together around a new COVID bill that will deliver some relief that's much needed. But I think it's a misnomer to say that, you know, we didn't do enough last year.
And briefly, before I let you get back to your day, broadband, do you see that as a point where you and legislative Democrats and the governor can maybe work together?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been a priority of ours dating back to when Scott Walker was governor. Obviously, Governor Evers put some money into it, and we approved of that in the budget. And I don't see any reason why we would go backwards. It is a critical part of today's society and something that people need access to. And in too many cases, the private sector just can't do it on their own because the return on investment isn't there. So government needs to step in and help.
Representative Steinicke, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's Representative Jim Steinicke, Republican from a district, the 5th District, just north of Appleton, Assembly Majority Leader. Phil Chen is still with us, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Beloit College. The unemployment issue last year, things didn't go well in Wisconsin. Phil, what do you make of the back and forth? The governor saying, hey, it's our antiquated system. Republican saying, hey, it's our governor.
You know, I think this is what you might expect when a major governmental system largely fails to do what it's supposed to do. And in all likelihood, it probably falls somewhere in the middle. You know, again, this isn't my expertise isn't in the administration of unemployment systems. But if you look at the, you know, the nonpartisan reports that have been put out, the blame probably rests in a number of places. It is clearly an outdated system. But there may have been things that could have been done earlier from the Evers administration as well. So, you know, I think you're going to see this kind of back and forth between the, you know, Republicans and Democrats on whose fault it is or what we need to do. But ultimately, I think the likelihood that something will change is still very high. It may not happen in the, you know, through the special session. But as Representative Steinicke was saying, it's possible that Governor Evers already has the authority to make some of those changes. So we're likely to see changes in the unemployment system. It's just a question of, you know, where people will attribute blame or if it will be sort of in the weeds enough that people won't really understand whose fault it is.
I should say we'll also hear from a Democratic lawmaker in just a few minutes. Phil, this is a big year. You know, it's our budget year in Wisconsin. That's a big deal, probably the biggest thing the legislature does. Also, redistricting, how we draw our lines for the state legislature, another COVID-19 relief thing or effort, maybe fixing unemployment. Do you see our government being functional enough in a divided government situation to tackle those problems?
You know, it's one of those things where it's hard to see a bipartisan agreement on something like unemployment insurance, but that we are likely to see some kind of movement on that. I don't see really any means of compromise on something like redistricting. I think that almost certainly will go to the courts. I just don't see we haven't seen enough support among Republicans for, the processes that Governor Evers put in place. And I don't see Governor Evers ever acquiescing to, you know, a similarly drawn legislative map. So that I don't think there'll be any chance of a real compromise. But I do think that something like a second coronavirus relief bill, of course, you would think that Republicans and Democrats, the governor, the legislature want to find some kind of common ground. And so I think we may see them working together on something like that. Issues will kind of maybe be dealt with in more singular fashion rather than kind of one cohesive package.
We're talking to political scientist Phil Chen from Beloit College. We're looking at speeches made by Governor Evers and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss last night. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Where do you put the blame for the unemployment insurance problems in Wisconsin last year during the COVID-19 outbreaks early and middle days? Are you frustrated by state government and its ability or lack of same to work together on key issues? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation, hear from another lawmaker coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the State of the State address from the governor last night and the Republican response. Phil Chen stays with us from Beloit College. You can share your reactions at 800-642-1234. We heard from a Republican lawmaker earlier in the conversation. Earlier today, I also talked to Janet Bewley, Democratic State Senator who represents a big chunk of northwestern Wisconsin, including Superior, Ashland, and Rice Lake. She's the Senate Minority Leader. Senator Bewley, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
First of all, your overall reactions to what you heard last night from the governor and from the assembly leader.
Well, first of all, you know, it was a different setup. No audience for the governor, and Representative Voss did have people in his room. But I would say overall, I got a sense from the governor of a new optimism. He seemed very dedicated, very organized, had very concrete things to talk about. And I'm very, very pleased with the things he had to say. This, of course, in just hours after the Senate passed the COVID bill. I was very, very pleased with the progress that was made by that and in getting it passed. Now, of course, it has to go to the Assembly. So all in all, I was very pleased with the governor.
Getting into a couple particular issues, the governor wants lawmakers to meet next week to work on fixing the state's unemployment insurance system. We all know about the problems this year. He blamed outdated technology. Republicans and others have said, well, the governor did not take enough leadership on this issue. What are your thoughts on the unemployment system and how it functioned in 2020?
Well, I think that, you know, so many different examinations of DWD have taken place. I'm on the audit committee. It had a full and complete audit, and some recommendations were made, but it did show that we are up to date, or at that time we were. I do know that the system is outdated, horribly so. What kind of personnel changes or different things could be made is all in the rearview mirror because, of course, in the time of COVID, we can never say that so many things were up in the air. So many things were totally unpredicted. I am very glad now, though, that we are going to start from scratch and give the DWD the hardware, the software, the platform that it is going to need in order to meet the needs of the people in Wisconsin who are unemployed.
Another critique of the governor from Republicans, and again some others, is a lack of a sense of urgency and of transparency, both with unemployment and now with vaccine distribution. Are there things you'd like to see from the Evers administration that we haven't seen so far?
Well, I know that the two things that you've mentioned, Evers was completely transparent about unemployment. There was a graphic about, you know, what the numbers were posted all the time. And when it comes to the vaccine, it is pretty much because the governors don't know across the country. The numbers of vaccine that are supposed to be delivered either don't come or when they do come, they're in inadequate amounts. I know that the states are responsible for the distribution, but if you can't fix a supply chain error above you, it affects everybody beneath it. And the supply chain break comes from Washington, D.C.
The governor also talked about broadband access, an important issue I know in your part of the state and many others. Do you see this as a problem that both sides of the aisle could actually work together on?
I do, and I do because I think that COVID has completely exposed just how critical access to the internet is, not only for things like access to telemedicine or filing for unemployment, but basic information. People use the internet. Imagine, if you will, that you couldn't use Google ever. You know, we use the internet as at providing information and education. Countless commercials, notices in the paper all say, go to www.internet.com. and then fill in the blank, and that's where you're going to get your information. And if you don't have the internet, all of these resources you cannot access. And so I think that, and not to mention the abject loneliness of people who don't have Zoom or any of the ability to work from home or visit from home. It's an unequal state when it comes to what I think is basic infrastructure. We are now at the point that broadband is infrastructure, just like roads and electricity.
Senator Buley, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. I'll come back anytime.
State Senator Janet Buley, Democrat. We're talking about the State of the State address last night and the Republican response. Phil Chen stays with us from Beloit College. Let's bring on a caller. John is with us in Eau Claire. John, hello.
Hey, hi there. Thanks for taking my call. When you're faced with a crisis we have been in 2020 with COVID, both to our health and our economy, and I'm, by the way, I'm an independent voter, so this isn't partisan, but my wife's a critical care nurse, and I know how bad this has been. I hear about it every day when she comes home from work. When you're in a crisis, you've got to work together, and I've been part.
John, you're breaking up. I think we take your point, Phil. John, disappointed that there was a lack of cooperation, a lack of coming together during a crisis.
Yeah, I think that's a fairly common, I think, feeling is that they're really at both the national level, at many of the state levels, there just simply wasn't a lot of common ground to be found in how to address this crisis. That being said, I think a lot of it comes down to the way that elites in both parties presented information, who perhaps thought the pandemic early on was a very important problem, who sort of downplayed it, and how that trickled down into their voters. And so I think that while I take the point, and I think a lot of people are disappointed, a lot of it does sort of trace back to how the pandemic was originally talked about and originally framed, and even continuing from there.
Do you see, Phil, any signs that we're getting through that polarization in response to COVID-19, seeing a shared response? And I shouldn't over-exaggerate. A lot of people are wearing masks. A lot of people are, you know, taking this thing seriously. But do you see more common ground emerging now or in the near future?
You know, I think that the vaccine in some ways may, you know, fingers crossed, lead to a little bit more of a discussion around some of this, because there is sort of an end point in sight, right? I think that people were really worried. You know, we saw a lot of reactions from Republicans saying, well, you can't just shut down the economy. And then Democrats saying, well, you can't solve the coronavirus pandemic without some of these more restrictive measures. Now that there's kind of a sort of tentative endpoint in sight, you might see a little bit more agreement. Again, though, a lot of the beliefs are already baked in. A lot of the opinions are set based on prior beliefs. And so it does make it very difficult, but you might see a little bit more of that now that we have, you know, the summer to look forward to, saying June, July, when we're hearing maybe there will be sort of widespread vaccinations.
Phil, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Of course. Happy to be here.
Phil Chen is assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. We talked to him about the takeaways from Governor Tony Evers' State of the State address last night, as well as the Republican response from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, Twitter banned the president's personal account. A social media expert shares thoughts on that decision, and you can tell us what you think about it. President Trump has had a huge impact on the Republican Party. Will it last? We'll look at the future of the GOP after Donald Trump leaves the White House. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. He can read a defense really well, so he should be able to read answers to questions pretty easily. Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers announced this week that he has a special job lined up during the NFL offseason. He'll be a celebrity guest host on Jeopardy. Since the passing of Alex Trebek, the long-running game show is lining up a series of special guest hosts, and Rogers would be a natural. In an interview on the Pat McAfee Show, Rogers says he's a long-running fan of the quiz show, and he plays along at home trying to answer the questions, or question the answers, I guess is the way that works. Back in 2015, he was a contestant on an episode of Celebrity Jeopardy, winning $50,000 for charity, going up against the star of Shark Tank and against retired astronaut and now U.S. Senator Mark Kelly. Rogers does have one or two things to clear up before that hosting gig, though, and if all goes well, he'll be able to show off a new Super Bowl ring on Jeopardy. I don't want to jinx anything here, but we'll keep our fingers crossed. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.